Committee on Stream Restoration and Species Recovery. I want to commend our House members for being here. It seems like we're a little scarce on senators this morning, so we'll just be convening a subcommittee this morning of the committee. But we will hear, I'm going to use executive a privilege here and reorder the agenda. I'd like to start with the hearing, public hearing, at least on House Joint Memorial 11. And we have two folks that have signed up for HJM 11. I'd like to call Doug Riggs from the Hanford Information Network. He's available. Let's have an overview of the House Joint Memorial, and Representative Jensen, would you like to make a couple of proprietary remarks since this is a bill that you've brought?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. House Joint Memorial 11 has to do with the cleanup of the Hanford area, Hanford Nuclear Reservation, just across the river from my district. And Oregon has not been an official party to what is called the tri-party agreement as far as Hanford is concerned. And one of the things that is proposed in HJM 11 amendment is to make, to request Congress to make us an official party to that. I think this is this should be a short discussion item for us, Mr. Chair, but I think it's one of the very important things that we're dealing with. We talked in one of the committees last week, I believe it was, about the Umatilla Army Depot and the possibility of an event at the Umatilla Army Depot with the nerve gas there, and if there were to be an event at Hanford, it would make the worst-case scenario out of the Umatilla Army Depot minor by comparison. I think one of the seriousness of that issue, I think, was illustrated by one of the meetings I was in when it was told, we were told by, quote-unquote, the officials that are supposed to be in the know, that if there were a meltdown in one of the containers on Hanford, it would make Chernobyl look like a 4th of July firecracker by comparison. So this is an extremely serious issue. We've been going for 50 years adding nuclear waste and not removing any of it, and it's time, I think, we send Congress as strong a message as we can. With that, I'll bow to the professional testimony.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. It is a concern, I think, for all Oregonians. We could go ahead and have testimony from Mr. Riggs.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify bright and early this Monday morning. For the record, I'm Doug Riggs. I am one of the founders and a board member of the Hanford Information Network. We are a relatively new group. We have members in Oregon and Washington, and we have a kind of a unique perspective on Hanford issues. As you may know, there are several dozen Hanford groups out there. You probably met with a number of them, and we've been working with several. Most of them have been active for the last 10 years in trying to get the government around to cleaning up this mess and trying to get it away from nuclear technology. We support the cleanup aspect of that, but we are primarily formed to try to help organize and unify Oregon, Washington, and Idaho together in this effort. And that's been one of the problems that we've had in the past, is there has not been enough cooperation between the Northwest states. Our goal really is very simple. We believe that only if the Northwest delegation and the Northwest states unify and work together on this issue, will the federal government, Congress in particular, be willing to put for the multi-billions of dollars that are necessary to be able to clean up the tanks the tank waste in particular, and Representative Jensen alluded to it. There are 177 underground tanks, many of them as big as 1 million gallons. They contain 54 million gallons total of an interesting mixture of nuclear waste, chemical waste, hazardous waste, things as simple as paint thinner and things as complicated as cesium and strontium. This is stuff that was put in the tanks in the 40s and 50s that people really did not understand how to deal with, so they figured we'd put it all in these tanks, we'll let it sit for a few years, and this magic bullet technology will come forth and we'll be able to magically clean it up. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. There are some good new technologies, and I'll be talking a little bit about that in a few moments. Let me make one point in particular. The tanks at Hanford are probably the nation's most pressing environmental need, bar none. There is no more important and more serious long-term threat to the environment in this country than those tanks. And I will say that the Department of Energy recently has taken a very aggressive stance on this. I think Mike Rainey will be testifying about it a little bit later from the Oregon DOE. The problem that we have with funding is that the Washington, D.C. delegation often perceives the Northwest as a delegation divided. They look and they see Oregon on the one side of the river and Washington on the other side of the river, and they see former debates about MOX fuel production, tritium production, how we've handled downwind records, whether or not we had a nuclear power, whether we should have a nuclear arsenal, and they view that as disunity among the Northwest delegation on cleanup issues. And that's unfortunately not the case. As you and I both know, Oregon and Washington both support cleanup, but the perception of Washington, D.C., unfortunately, has been the opposite. What we really need to do, and what our group is really formed to do, is jointly communicate the fundamental support for cleanup to the federal government. We also need to acknowledge both the problems that we've had in the past and the solutions and the successes that we've had at Hanford over the last 4 or 5 years. We need to be seen as partners working together to recognize these things. Let me just point out a few good things that are happening at Hanford recently. As you all know, there are 9 reactors all closed down all along the Columbia River. The Whoops reactor, of course, is not a DOE reactor. It's a separate reactor. But the 9 production reactors are all closed down. There's been a cocooning effort which takes those reactors and puts them into a safe stage by, instead of tearing them all down, picking up all the pieces, exposing the contamination and moving them inland, tears down all the extraneous material on the outside of the reactors, encases those reactor cores in concrete and steel, and puts them into a safe state for the next 75 years. Tremendously positive development, strongly supported by environmental groups, the business community, the contractors, and the DOE. And the best thing about this is it saves about $180 million per reactor. So this is a new thing that's going on. But also, 2 main developments with some of the old processing plants, the V plant and the Purex plant, both of which have been cocooned and shut down ahead of schedule and under budget, rather unique for Hanford, saving millions of dollars in annual surveillance and maintenance costs. So that's really positive. There's also very recently been a much better organized effort to clean out those tanks. Congress has renamed the program the Office of River Protection. When I worked in Washington, D.C., I had a little bit to do with that. It's a new way to manage the tank cleanup in a more business-like perspective. We have a 2-year interim contract now to explore some new design work, and hopefully within 2 years we'll have a signed contract to begin to get that under control. 3 more quick points. We have a brand new site manager. It's coming from Colorado, and Carlsbad, New Mexico, where he's been for the last few months. We have a new Office of River Protection specifically designed to clean up those tanks. We have a new director who I met with last weekend, who's a very aggressive, a take-charge individual. I think he'll be an excellent head of that program. And the main contractor, Fleur Daniel, has a new president as of last August. In addition, there are a number of very positive river cleanup issues right along the Columbia River run by Bechtel, which are going along very well. I want to commend the committee for taking this bill up. It's an excellent step in letting the Congress know how important this is from Oregon's perspective. I want to commend the sponsor of the legislation, Representative Jensen and Senator Ferrioli, and we strongly support it. I would like to submit for the record a statement from another group, an environmental group called Hanford Watch. We've been working closely with Hanford Watch. They submitted some amendments, which I think Representative Jensen alluded to. if I could submit that to the committee's perusal. And just sum it up in a nutshell, in the past, in this region, we've often focused on differences on Hanford issues. But the funding crisis we're about to face in the next 5 to 10 years, when we need billions of dollars to build this cleanup plant, requires that we focus on our similarities, on cleanup, on progress, and on stable funding. If we work together, the Northwest community can get this message out to the federal government and make sure that these essential cleanup efforts can move forward efficiently and rapidly. As a result, again, I thank the committee, and I encourage you to pass this bill today. Thank you very much.
Any questions from the committee? I have a couple. When you say this is the most pressing environmental issue in the nation, is it pressing because it's in the Pacific Northwest, or is it as serious as you indicated in relative terms?
I think in the next 10 to 15 years, in relative terms to the nation's perspective, this is not only the largest environmental cleanup we're facing, but it's also the most pressing. It has the potential, if we don't do something, I think that we're headed in the right direction on the tank cleanup program at this point, but it certainly has the potential to be a major national environmental problem. Just, Mr. Chairman, if you look at the tanks, the single-shell tanks were built not out of stainless steel, but out of carbon steel during World War II, and that was largely because they wanted to use stainless steel for other purposes. And so they use cheaper, less efficient carbon steel, which is deteriorating in the single-shell tanks. Double-shell tanks are still good for a number of years, but the single-shell tanks are really the things that we have to worry about.
President Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Somewhat off the subject, but certainly related. The debate we have had nationally over the repository of spent fuel rods. And I remember just a couple of years ago where Nevada was going ballistic because the country decided Nevada was a good place to put all these things because they have no voters. Where are you guys? Are you guys involved in that, in those discussions at all? I mean, that certainly does play in here because there's some things that are just going to have to be transferred someplace else. So how does all that fit together here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cruz, our group has not specifically gotten involved in this particular issue, but it is an important point you raise. The Yucca Mountain site in Nevada is in the study stages. No final determination has been made, of course. Most people in Nevada would like to see it go someplace else, and the federal government, especially Congress, would like to see that open. That would certainly be a repository for many of Hanford's cleaned up wastes. For instance, the spent fuel rods in the K basins along the Columbia River are destined to go to a repository. I think what our group believes is that they should go off site at some point when that site is open. And in the meantime, we have to do everything we can to get them cleaned up into a safe state. So if they have to remain on site for the next 15 or 20 years, they're safe. And that's something that would be one of our top priorities.
Yeah. Follow up, Mr. Chair? Yeah.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Well, thank you. I would hate to see us get into a mode here of saying, you know, the cleanup of Hanford would be done at the expense of Nevada or at the expense of some other state, when really we should be looking at the proper way of disposal here, rather than just shift it to a state that has no political power to prevent that from happening.
Representative Thompson has a question.
Shell tanks, but they're carbon steel. You must have gone through and tested. I assume that it's almost like rust that's affecting these tanks. Is it rust or is it
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, you're exactly right. The tanks have corroded significantly. The underground single-shell tanks were designed with a 20-year design life, so they've now been in the ground some as many as 50 years. The department and its contractors have had a very aggressive program in the last year or two to drain the liquids out of those underground tanks, and some of them have leaked in the past. We do not believe that any of the tanks are currently leaking, but a number of them have leaked in the past, and it is like much like a tin can left out in the sun for 50 years. It's going to rust away, and granted, carbon steel is a half inch or an inch thick, so takes a lot longer to rust away, but it is something that is a concern, and that's why we need to get the liquid waste out of those tanks as soon as possible. double shell tanks, I would point out, are stainless steel, and they have 2-inch thick shells. They have leak monitoring detection systems, and they have a much longer life than the single shell tanks. What they're trying to do is take all the liquids out of the single shell tanks, pump them across the site into the double shell tank for safety.
We've had anecdotal stories and some more than just anecdotal about leakage from the tanks. What can you tell us about that situation?
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned, there have been a number of the tanks that have leaked, and I think we have pumped the liquids out of most of those leaking tanks. I think we're going to be pumping liquids out of a total of 8 tanks at some point during this year, so that is certainly something that needs to be done. The leaks have gone into the area which we find is called a vadostone, which is the area from the bottom of the tank down to the groundwater. Some of the past leaks and some of the other discharges from 20 and 30 years ago have gotten into the groundwater. Some of that groundwater is moving towards the Columbia River. The only contamination that I'm aware of that is actually in the groundwater is tritium that has reached the river. And that's reaching the river in very small quantities and is almost undetectable 10 or 15 yards downstream. But that does not mean that we should not be doing anything about this. On the contrary, I think this illustrates the need to increase the speed and the efficiency of the tank cleanup programs that we have. And the goal here is to take all that liquid waste out of the tank, mix it with sand, heat it up to a very high temperature, and turn it into large glass lawns. And that will encapsulate the contamination. We put that in stainless steel containers, and it's safe for storage for hundreds of years, if possible, or if necessary.
Further questions? Representative Thompson.
You mentioned tritium and some of the other, the not so lethal products. What else is in the groundwater now that has the potential to get to the Columbia River in the near future?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, I believe that there's a number of both radioactive and non-radioactive materials that fall in the groundwater. Carbon tetrachloride is one of the contaminants that was discharged, I think, directly into gigantic pits back in the 40s and 50s. There is a program run by Bechtel to pump that water out, take the carbon tetrachloride out of the water, and then pump the water back into the ground in a clean state. That's one of the contaminants. I believe that there is limited amounts of cesium and strontium, which are the two of the main radioactive components. I'm not sure of all the other contaminants, but I could certainly get that for you.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up?
Because I'm not familiar with what the effects of carbon tet are. I mean, in fact, in the 50s, we used it for everything, fire extinguishers. What's the potential damage to the people living in the area from carbon tet?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, I'm not sure about that. I'd have to check.
Okay,
further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Riggs. Mike Greaney from the Oregon Office of Energy.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mike Graney, Assistant Director of the Oregon Office of Energy. We also support this memorial and want to thank and commend Representative Jensen for sponsoring this. I think he spoke much more eloquently than I can about the concerns we all have about Hanford and the interests we have. So I'll just be very brief. First, the materials that we're passing out gives you some background both on the tank waste that Doug Riggs talked about, and other issues of concern at Hanford as well, and the efforts that we have been taking to try to make progress on cleanup and to assure that Oregon's concerns and priorities are addressed. Secondly, the amendments that Representative Jensen has also introduced with the memorial, we also support. We think it's very important. It stresses, again, the fact that Oregon currently has no role in decisions made at Hanford. And it's our people as well as the people of Washington that are at risk from Hanford, and that should have a role. We have no role in the decisions that are made regarding the tri-party agreement, regarding adjustments to that agreement, regarding decisions that have to be made to delay work because of funding shortfalls. And so that amendment, we think, is very important. It's also consistent with resolutions that the legislature has passed previously. And I think it would be very helpful to our congressional delegation. Our members are looking for legislation to amend to give Oregon a role at Hanford. And I've talked personally with Senators Smith and Wyden and Congressman DeFazio and Walden, who are all interested in and looking for legislation, and it's supported by the rest of the Oregon delegation as well. So again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for scheduling this memorial. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee? Senator Nelson.
Yes, Mike. I guess I've heard at some point or another that if you breach the dams, that there's a potential that there's radioactive contamination within the river itself, that you would create a huge amount of sediment. Is there any truth to that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, the only evidence we have of sediment, radioactive sediment, is behind McNary Dam. There seems to be pretty good indication that there has been sediment buildup there over the years. We don't know the amount. We don't know the extent. It's been in a stable form because it has essentially been buried and covered over by the way the river flows and backs up there. The river itself is monitored for radiation. In fact, City of Richland takes its drinking water from the Columbia River. So we know the levels of radiation in the river, which are very, very low, as close as Richland. But as far as sediment, that's about all I can tell you.
Just to follow up, it seems to me that the radioactive issue is probably the most important issue, and yet it doesn't get very high on people's radar screen. Do any of the environmental groups in the state of Oregon assist in this cleanup or in this effort to try and get Washington to clean up this mess?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, yes. There's a number of citizens groups that have been very active on Hanford issues. There's a Hanford advisory board that the U.S. Department of Energy set up a few years ago. About 30 members of that board with interests from both states, and about a third of those are citizens groups with large representation in Oregon.
Hey, just one more follow-up.
Since
I'm in this kind of mood this morning, what is the relative dangers of the radiation, say, as to commercial use of pesticides? Do you have an opinion on that?
Chair Nelson, I really don't. I don't have a way of comparing that. I can compare it to the commercial nuclear power industry. I guess I like to take the opportunity whenever I can to do so because the commercial power industry has been regulated by federal and state standards it has to meet. There's no comparison with the kind of problems we have at the federal facilities like Hanford, which were unregulated for 50 years, had no standards, have been driven simply by budget and national security priorities. Those national security priorities were extremely important, but they were that mantra was used to cover a multitude of sins as well, I think, and we're paying the price of it now.
Representative Thompson.
I'm curious about the sediment you're talking about behind McNary Dam. And is it just trace? That we're talking about, how come there hasn't been an assessment if there's even a trace behind there in that sediment?
Just Chairman Representative Thompson, not sure I can give you a really good answer on that. Part of, I think, the concern has been stirring it up could make it worse. I know it is something that the federal government has monitored and does periodically take samples, but they also want the best protection in a case like that because these are relatively trace elements is to leave it undisturbed.
Follow up, Mr.
Would you say take assessment? I mean, they must have some kind of report as to the volume and it's there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, may have some, and I'd be glad to get some more details on that.
I appreciate some kind of a volume estimate. It doesn't need to be real. What kind of volume are we looking at? If we're looking at a few hundred yards, or are we looking at millions of tons, because the sediment behind the dam like that can be in massive volumes. So some kind of action would be appreciated.
Be glad to do that.
Anything further from the community? Hearing no more, seeing no more questions, if there's anybody else in the assembly here that would like to offer testimony on House Trent Memorial 11, please make yourself known. If not, we'll go right into work session on this bill. We're in work session.
Mr. Chair.
Representative King.
Additional testimony was presented, but it hasn't been provided to us yet. And for any voting, I'd sure like to see it. Thank you.
What we have is a letter from Hanford Watch in support of the memorial. And it details the growing dangers of aging infrastructure, including 177 tanks that hold 54 million gallons of radioactive and chemical waste, and the K basins, which hold 2,300 tons of irradiated fuel. And it is signed by Paige Knight, president of Hanford Watch, and urges in the strongest possible language the movement of this bill. Representative Thompson.
Sure, I'd like to move the Hand Growth Amendment to House Grant Memorial 11 into the Frank Memorial 11.
And that would be the dash one, Hand and Growth. Is there any question on the motion?
Mr. Chair?
Question.
Just a comment. Great bill. We can't afford to let the pressure up. I mean, we've been at this a long time, and we've come a long way, but we're a long way away, too. So.
Yeah. Agree.
Congratulations, President Jensen, on bringing this forward.
I'd just like to make a comment, Jim. I mean, we're here now, we're having these pesticide bills going through our house. And, I mean, our pesticide industry is regulated a huge amount. The big problem in the Northwest for contamination is the radioactive stuff in Hanford. I mean, that's where I think the environmental groups ought to be focusing their attention upon that. I mean, rather than worrying about whether we're putting on 1 ounce or 2 ounces of highly regulated chemicals that actually do a lot more good than they do harm because we're under this regulation. And the real serious issue is the radioactive problem we have in Hanford. And I think our environmental groups ought to be putting that as their top priority.
President Thompson.
Well, being the person who works on underground fuel tanks and pesticide issues and other issues, I'm glad to see this bill come forward because I agree this is probably represents the largest threat, single threat we have to this region. But likewise, we need to look at all pollution problems in the state because it may not kill millions of people, but the right wrong pollution in the wrong area can kill a few hundred people. If you're one of those people, it's a shame.
May I respond to that?
name
me a death from pesticide.
Well, we must not go there. And I'm not an anti-pesticide person, but we need to research to make sure that we do protect our environment, not only that, in the ocean.
Well, I think our
people can, and some of these represent.
Our farmers and ranchers are doing a tremendous job of doing that. And anybody that says they're not are just absolutely nuts.
So,
I'm a little angry this morning.
Committee, we have a Monday morning situation on our hands here. I would remind the committee that we have a
committee. I just think we had to have some priorities. I mean, what's more dangerous, a nuclear contamination or somebody helps some farmer out spraying it for his weeds?
Well, let's see. Let me think about that for a minute. What we have here is a motion on the floor, and the motion was to accept the Hammond Gross Dash 1 amendments, and if there are no objections to that motion, hearing none, we have the Hammond Gross Dash 1 amendments, and I think we need to call the roll on HGM 11. We need a motion to do that, however.
Joint Memorial 11 is the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves the joint memorial to the floor with the Ducasse recommendation. Has been ended. We will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Representative Jensen will carry for the House.
I'll carry in the Senate.
And Senator Nelson will carry for the Senate.
Boy, can I have a poor speech on this one? We'll cover a few other areas.
Nerve of the senator.
Well, I think this is going to be, let's see, we're in the 14th week of the legislative session. This is going to circle Monday on my calendar and see what happens the rest of the week. So we move on to our agenda. Our agenda committee is to take testimony on House Bill 3225 and its additional sections. So, Steve, do we have anybody that signed up to offer testimony? And in the meantime, Mr. Hemingway, I believe you've got your name on several sign-up sheets this morning, so welcome. And we are in public hearing on HB 3225.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. I'm Roy Hemingway from the Governor's Office, and we're testifying on a number of sections in the Dash 2 amendments of House Bill 3225. I want to thank the committee for its deliberative approach with respect to the restructuring questions. We know there are other amendments floating around, and we appreciate the committee taking these up one by one so that we can look at them one by one and testify on them. Very quickly, our comments are relatively minor. We, in Sections 2 through 6 of the Dash 2 amendments, we know that we are moving from the Governor's Natural Resource Office to the Oregon Natural Resources Office, and we could go either way on that. We could live with either result. In Sections 9 through 15, the Natural Heritage Program in the Division of State Lands would be moved into this office, and we can support that proposal. In Section 16, we believe that section would allow the Water Resources Department to continue administering the GWEB or the OWEB program, however it's called, within the single agency administering the restoration and protection subaccount under Measure 66, regardless of what agency that is. And we support the Water Resources Department exercising that function for the reasons that we gave on Saturday. And the rest of the testimony is largely technical, and that concludes my testimony.
Any questions for Mr. Hemingway? Representative Thompson?
I just glanced through it in Section 8. Here's from 9, so I just got a brief section. I'll wait.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Any further? Sure, anyway, I'd like to make a comment before you leave the podium. The amount of interaction that is required to discuss these issues and the cooperation that the committee's had from the Governor's office and, has been most gratifying. And we really appreciate the fact that we do have a give and take and an iteration going back and forth. And appreciate your testimony this morning and your engagement with this process.
We'll do our best to continue that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Question, Mr. Hughes.
Going to page 20, section 20, you wanted to retain the Water Resources Department, which then it says shall provide staff for project oversight and day-to-day operation. But then in the in your testimony, you have the sentence that you suggest the following sentence be added: Oregon Natural Resources Office will provide program management oversight. So I'm confused. It sounds like you want Water Resources Department to do project oversight and day-to-day operation, and you're asking for the Oregon Natural Resources Office to do what sounds like the same thing, and that you're wanting Water Resources to stay in and Oregon Natural Resources Office to not be put in. Can you clarify?
Representative King, our objective there is to keep the Water Resources Department as largely the fiscal agent for the Watershed Enhancement Program. And right now, our person who is running the Watershed Enhancement Program, Ken Beerley, is an employee of the governor's office. Is that correct? Louise Holliday.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, Louise Holliday with the Governor's Natural Resource Office. Technically, the program manager for GWEB, who's Ken Beerley, is an employee of the Department of Agriculture, but he is considered a staff member of the Governor's Natural Resource Office. So if we're, this language is intended to simply reflect the current structure of GWEB, which is the program manager is a member of the Governor's Natural Resource Office staff, so the program would be managed out of the ONRO if we change it to ONRO and legislate that. And the rest of the staff is actually at the Water Resources Department.
Follow-up, Spencer.
So are you wanting to have fiscal and management separated indefinitely or for some period of time?
We have found the fiscal management, Representative King, to, as we indicated on Saturday, to be very, work very well through Water Resources. You know, we can shift these bodies around to various department budgets within the Ways and Means process, if that makes sense. We've cobbled this together last session from a variety of sources as we put the governor's and the legislature's pieces together for the salmon plan. But right now, we feel that things are working well, and we'd like to retain that structure.
Thank you.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right, your testimony is on the dash 2 and not on the proposal that we saw on Saturday. Will you have testimony forthcoming on the Saturday proposal? Or?
Representative Jensen, when it's before the committee, we will have testimony. We have felt that, first of all, we've had very little time to review it, and it's the committee's process we're trying to interact with and not somebody else's or our own.
And, Representative Jensen, I think that it's valuable for us to hear, in general terms, the focus of the governor's office on these issues. So whether we get into the dash 2s or the subsequent iterations, at least we're hearing in general terms the parameters. Representative Jensen.
You're thinking, Mr. Chair. What I was trying to do was just keep myself straight on this to make sure that
a big job, Representative Jensen.
Yes, it is.
And we very much appreciate the committee's job in keeping it straight, because there is a fair amount of confusion right now.
Senator Duke.
Louise, on the questions that Representative King raised on Section 20, if we take Res suggestion and put this under the Water Resources Department, what does that do to Ken? Can you just shift him over there too?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, the intention is that the way the system is set up now would be continued under this line, which would legislate what we're the current structure. That is, the GWEB staff, with the exception of Ken, is at the Water Resources Department. The Water Resources Department administers, does the staffing, does our personnel, does our accounting services for us, manages the grant fund. Ken is technically employed by the Department of Agriculture, but is an employee of the Governor's Natural Resource Office. And this language is intended to just keep that in place.
So if we go back and use the Water Resources Department and delete Oregon Natural Resources Office, it will somehow come out even though Ken was out of ag?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Further questions? Representative Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Section 15, the National Heritage Program, what could you explain what that program is and what it does?
Mr. Chairman, no, I can't. I'm not very familiar with this program. I know it identifies natural areas and doesn't do anything much more than identify those areas. It doesn't manage them or slate them for acquisition.
Mr. Hemingway, there is apparently help available to you. So.
Jennifer.
Jennifer's here. She can do it.
Good morning, Chair Ferriola, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jennifer Robertson, Special Assistant to the Director of Division of State Lands. Also in the audience today is Stephen Anderson, who is the Chair of the Natural Heritage Advisory Council. And if I get in trouble, he might help. The Division of State Lands has historically provided administrative support for the Heritage Program, and the program, the Advisory Council, is advisory to the State Land Board, our governing board. The program has four main elements. It's mandated in statute to administer a natural heritage data bank, which provides information to developers and land managers about sensitive or rare species that may be on the lands that they are looking at, the locations of those species, and therefore assist in planning for development. The program also maintains the National Heritage Plan for Oregon, which is a couple hundred page document that is revised every 5 years that lists the natural heritage elements that are important to the state of Oregon and identifies where those elements are adequately protected, either on state or federal lands, occasional private lands, primarily nature conservancy-owned lands, and where they have not yet been protected, either in a research natural area or a wilderness area or something like that. And that's sort of the agenda for the Advisory Council, is to look for opportunities to protect sites that do have important heritage elements that are not yet set aside in a wilderness area or something like that. And to that end, we register and or dedicate natural heritage conservation areas, primarily on state-owned land. I believe there are about 80 sites on the National Register right now. And most of those are in state parks, Department of Fish and Wildlife Refuges, and Nature Conservancy lands, with a few on our State Land Board lands. That's the program in a nutshell. Be happy to answer any questions.
I have a follow-up, Mr. Chairman. I guess this is not a question, but more of a comment. I guess I would want to think a little longer and a little harder whether it would make sense to put that kind of a task in a policy office. I'm wondering if we're maybe not going the wrong direction here.
If I might respond, Representative Messerly, a couple of elements of this might make better sense to go into the Natural Resource Office or OWEB, particularly the data bank, which does provide this information. The state historically has not provided any support for that data bank, even though it's mandated in state legislation. Most of the money comes from federal agencies. The physical support is provided by the Nature Conservancy Field Office in Portland. That kind of information we are proposing now, to actually go out and get the information and then to maintain it over the long term. Actually, getting the information is probably about finishing it up is about a four-year task. But that would provide major support to watershed councils in doing watershed assessments. It would also digitize the information so it's available in GIS format. And that function might, for coordination purposes, be better housed within a web or ONRL with advice there. The dedication and registration of state-owned land may, in fact, be better off with the state network. So it could be separable in that sense.
Further questions, Representative Thompson?
I assume we're down here, we're down to where we're talking any of these sections now, not just section 1 through 7 and 20, because of the last question where you're discussing.
I think we're actually, if I didn't make it clear, we're in work session on all the sections specified for this morning. Or not work session, but public hearing for all the sections that were specified since Mr. Hemingway made testimony on all the sections.
Okay, I'll ask this question. Back on page 13, sub C, the dedication of natural heritage conservation area may be terminated by the, and we delete board and put in the word office. Upon the advice of the council in the area, no longer needed according to the guidelines of the plan, or has permanent loss of natural character. Would you explain to me, since you deal with that, what that means?
Chair Ferrioli, Representative Thompson. There are two mechanisms that work here. The first is registration, which simply says this site at such and such state park has the following values, shrub steppe ecosystem with the following native plant species with support animal species. The land and managing agency may go a step farther and actually dedicate that land, in which case it comes forward with a management plan and says we're dedicating this land to the preservation of these values. And here's how we're going to manage the land in order to do that. What this subsection says is that the land board accepts that dedication too. Someone from the Parks Department or whoever would come to the land board and say, we wish to dedicate this, and they present the dedication instrument and actually enter into an agreement with the land board. This section merely says that dedication may be terminated on certain circumstances.
This is being, it can be terminated, according to this wording, by the office. That's why I'm struggling.
Chair Ferrioli, Representative Thompson, I believe that would be the ONRO, the Office of Natural Resources.
I'll just leave it there. I mean, it's kind of unusual. Before, it had to be terminated by a board. All of a sudden, now it's terminated by an office, and that office seems to be controlled in a political sense. It looks like to me like we could terminate states. Am I reading that right?
Chair Ferrioli, Representative Thompson, I believe you are. That's one of the reasons that I suggested we might be able to split out the functions here, and that related to dedication and registration of lands might remain with the state land board, and the database functions could be transferred to OWEB or ONRO.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, if I might just add to that, we do need to, as we look at sections 9 through 15, need to look at where state land board got replaced by either ONRO and OWEB and where Division of State Lands to make sure that the decision-making body that shifted to the decision-making body, which is the issue I think that Representative Thompson is making, and in this case, this is a place where we went from a decision-making body to an office of staff.
Good point, Representative Thompson. I think what we need to do is make sure that as we get closer to final iterations, we do some schematic diagrams of where the authority is and where the people are. Further questions? Before we go further to other testimony, I'm going to close the public hearing on HB 3225 and open the work session again on HJM 11. Representative Leonard requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules to allow him to be recorded as voting on the motion to move HJM 11 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Move the floor in here.
We're fine.
We're okay. All right. Okay. Is there any objection to the request to suspend the rules? Hearing none, so ordered. Rules are suspended. Representative Leonard, how do you vote on that issue?
Aye.
Representative votes aye and will be recorded as an aye vote. And we will close the work session on HJM 11 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3225. And I call Deborah Boone from the Mechanicum Watershed Council.
Deborah Boone, I'm part-time coordinator for Mechanicum Watershed Council, Upper Left Coast of Oregon. I wasn't here on Saturday because when I called home Friday and I said, hi, is his mom, they said, who? So I... went home, and after I heard that only two Watershed Council people showed up here on Saturday, and I spent my weekend on the phone and the fast and everything else, probably. So I'm doing that now, and I'm unclear, though, whether or not you're just on sections 1 through 7 and 20, or all of them, any of them, what? Because after my ride down this morning, I may not be here for the next hearing. Who knows? It's a little scary. So I want to say short and sweet on, after reading this again for the third time last night, sections 1 through 7, we're okay. 20, we're okay. 9, I had a question that's already been answered as to what the National Heritage Program is, and without my ORS's handy-dandy, I didn't know, looking. And I wanted to know how the two boards would be different. Number 15, it says the money for, and it quotes ORS 273563-591, and without knowing what that law is, I'm not sure what that all is about, so I can't say how we feel about that. And on sections 10 and 18, the two different boards, all we would say is we think that maybe you need to add a tribal member and fisheries member, either one or two fisheries for commercial and sport, or one that can do both, if that's possible. I don't know. Representative Thompson might have some opinion on that. And then on section 19, on the one, maybe allow state or federal agency to apply for grant funding with a watershed council or SWCD so that the work can get done, because sometimes they are integral to parts of the project but don't have the funding allowed in their agency as it stands, because projects come up. And that's all I have. I'll be here again tomorrow if I'm alive.
Record will stay open for written testimony. So if you wanted to go back, check the ORFs, and then bring back additional testimony for at least 10 days.
Okay.
Any questions for Ms. Boone? Thank you. Is there any other person here present that wishes to testify on House Bill 3225, associated sections? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3225, and we will move to the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2102, and we'll have a brief presentation of 2102 from the staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2102, you should have the -1 amendments, which do completely replace the original bill, and that's what's being proposed to be considered today. The -1 amendments do, my understanding, represent an agreement by the Fish Passage Task Force at the department, if that's the correct name of that group. The -1 amendments due date that until June 30th of the year 2001, that the department will not initiate action with respect to fish waste, fish screening devices, and hatcheries near dams. The following section 3 lists conditions that can be developed in a memorandum of agreement under which those requirements would be waived. A major component, if you will look on page 2 of the amendment, in section 4 is calling for the department to convene a fish passage task force, and you'll see on lines 11 through 25 the proposed representation on that task force. And the task force is charged with coming back to the Legislative Assembly with a report specifically including recommendations regarding fish passage and alternative mitigation requirements. If you look at section 5 of the measure on page 3, starting on line 7, is where the primary fiscal impact will come from. In addition to costs related to the task force and such, you will see that the department is then directed to inventory and evaluate dams and artificial obstructions to fish passages that store at least 9.2 acre feet or more. And due to that possible large fiscal impact, the recommendation from the department, in fact, would be to move this task Ways and Means to take a look at this. It does also include an emergency clause. So at the moment, we don't have a fiscal. If we recommend moving it to Ways and Means, of course, we don't need a fiscal, but they will, in fact, work on those, look at those costs closely at that point. So that's the measure before us.
And this is a known in the vernacular as a, this is an entire replacement of the bill. Yes. So this is what we call a gut and stuff. I'd like to call Roy Elicker and Jan Lee to discuss how this language was derived.
Chair Mezzoli, Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. My name is Roy Elicker. I'm the program manager for the Fish Screening and Passage Program, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The Dash 1 amendment represents a, probably, I think it's a unanimous recommendation from the Fish Passage Task Force of this biennium, who took a hard look at the fish passage statutes in a bill similarly worded, if not exactly worded, from last session. And it was consensus of the task force that one of the biggest reasons we didn't come up with probably some significant legislative changes is that, frankly, we ran out of time. And we're, I think generally the task force would like more time to finish the process. There are some very difficult issues left to be discussed on fish passage, in particular the existing structures and whether or not there should be mitigation for those. But I think it was the consensus of the task force that good progress was made this session, and we'd like to finish up that during the next biennium.
Question, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Elicker, on page 3, line 9. Normally in the past, I believe we've referred to 9.2 acre feet and 10 feet or higher. I see it to me that not only makes it a much larger job for you folks to deal with either or, as well as it brings a lot more people into who were previously exempt from regulation into the scope of this thing. Could you explain why that was added in there?
Chair Mezzoli, there was a lot of discussion on just that point, and I've had some discussion again this morning with some other lobbyists and such. It certainly wasn't the department's intent to take a second look at projects previously exempt, for instance, under the Ponds Extension Bill last session. Rather, what the task force needs is they need a sense of the extent of the problem of fish passage and barriers in the state. And so it was an attempt by the task force to kind of come up with language to allow the department to take as hard a look as possible exactly what is the extent of the problem. We've discussed it this morning about changing that instead of or to an and with water for life, another lobbyist. The department has no objection to that.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, if I could just make a further comment. To me, that would make a huge difference in the fiscal aspect of this section, wouldn't it?
Representative Mesley, excuse me, Chair Mesley, that's correct. It probably would, and so we'd have to go back and take a second look at our fiscal at this point.
President Susan, and then referencing
thank you, Mr. Chair Roy. Section 4, the task force, I guess I had, unless this is the language that created the current task force and that's your intent is just to extend that, I guess the language that says one or more representatives from, you could theoretically create a 1,000-person task force here. So I guess my concern is it the intent just to reauthorize the task force, or are we growing something here by a considerable margin?
Chair Mesley and Ferrioli, Representative Cruz, no, it's not our intent to have the task force increase. That's exactly the same language from last session, sir.
President King.
Well, I see the public mandate to check the fish, but it looks like there are additional mandates here for you to do work that in some cases would be a private benefit, and I'm wondering if we're putting more mandates on you without funding that when I know you've got budget issues for your agency, or are we actually in effect making it more efficient to deal with mandates you already have and relieving some of your budget problems too? So are we adding an unfunded mandate, or are we helping you operate more efficiently?
Chair Mesley, Ferrioli, Representative King. I guess I'm not sure how to answer that question. Help me focus a little bit. To my knowledge, I guess the answer is no, particularly if we have funding for Section 5, the inventory process. That would give us a real handle on the extent of fish passage problems in the state. And so that's what we're looking for. The fiscal on. I'm not sure the other language does much except to put together a task force process, actually continue the existing one, and then bring forward recommendations to the legislature. I think at that point, then, the question of mandates will be an issue in front of the next session.
I guess I follow. So we have in our budget how to pay for this process already, or is this an additional process that we haven't budgeted for you?
Representative King, referring to the task force process, or?
I'm talking about doing the work that's described here.
Oh, in Section 5, sir?
Well, it says, it directs the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to operate a comprehensive program to maintain, restore, and enhance fish passages artificial. So you have to operate, some kind of a program there. It has to cost some money to operate a program, I'm just wondering. Is this an additional job that you have to pay for, or is this already something that is in your budget and you're doing it currently? I'm wondering who's paying.
I'm sorry, Representative King, could you refer me to the section that you're reading from?
I was reading from the agenda.
Chairs, Mesley and Ferrioli, Representative King, the department currently has a fish passage program that is funded primarily to work on culvert inventory and repair, as well as some fish passage problems. I think the task force recommendations next session, once they have a sense of the extent of the fish passage problems in the state, will be coming forward with some fiscal analysis of that, what might be taken to seek to restore passage to habitat where it's been cut off. But as far as the department right now, they have a small fish passage program, primarily on culverts, and also large projects as well under the statute, and that is currently funded.
Is this going to be a much larger project to do this work that was described on the agenda?
Chairs Messonelli and Ferrioli, Representative King. Yes, the department would need additional funds for the inventory. And that, and at this point, because we've just changed some of the language inventory, I'm not sure exactly what that fiscal impact would look like today.
Thank you. I guess to follow that, I'm just kind of wondering who we're going to be looking to pay, whether it's general funds or if there's some other kind of funding mechanism to pay for the additional work when we get there, when we, if we're approving this. Thank you.
Representative, it would go to Ways and Means, be assigned by the co-chairs to a subcommittee, probably Natural Resources in the Senate, and then we'll figure out who pays.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Is there any questions? For the testimony.
I might just add, Chair Farrell, members of the committee, my name is David Mormon from the Department of Forestry, and you have my written testimony. I won't add to that other than just saying we're in support of the Dash 1 Amendment.
Ms. Lane?
Yes. Mr. Chair, committee members, I would like to add that if we don't get the funding for Section 5, I'm not sure how we will do the job. Because
please, for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jan Lee with Oregon Water Resources Congress. I was a member of the task force, and one of the concerns that the task force had was we don't have the information to determine what is out there that's existing, what kind of fish passage is there, what needs to be fixed. If we don't have the inventory, I'm not sure that we can do any better job than we did in the last 18 months.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Lee?
Representative
Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jan, are you saying that you would not be in favor of changing the or to and? Or are you talking about larger hope?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm in favor of that. I'm just saying that the inventory in general needs to be developed so we have something to work from.
Question from Representative Morgan.
I don't know who could best answer this, but do you have a plan in mind for how to accomplish this inventory and evaluation? Is this information that already exists in records somewhere that you're just going to be gathering together, or does this actually involve you having to go out on the ground and do surveys?
Chair Ferrioli, naturally, Representative Morgan, we have for this biennium, for this task force process, we have pretty much pulled together all we have using databases, water resources, and our own. And this inventory that's envisioned, we'll have to spend some time on the ground. I mean, there'll have to be an on-the-ground process. So there'll be, you know, in other words, the process would be, we probably have, like we do for culverts, where we send people out to look at culverts, see if there's fish there, moving through, those kinds of things. My sense would be, in cooperation with, for instance, the person that owns the fish passage structure, but we're going to have to go on the ground to get this information. I don't know how else to describe that to you, Representative.
Are you going to be able to complete this inventory in the next biennium then?
Here's Leslie Ferrioli, Representative Morgan. We're hoping to, early in the biennium, be able to come up with maybe not the complete information, but a good handle on the information, provide the task force material for which it can work from. So yes, I'm assuming we would complete it next biennium. And sooner than the end of the biennium.
I guess just kind of philosophically where I'm coming from here is, you know, what I hear you saying is that that you may or may not complete this within the next biennium, and then that puts us in the place in the next session of the legislature where we're doing this again.
Chair Mesley, Chair only Representative Morgan, no, let me rephrase that. We will finish the inventory next biennium. That is the goal, and I don't see any reason, depending on the funding we receive, why that could not be done at this point.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we no longer have enough senators to move this, I thought I'd ask a question.
I can go
get them. My question is, there's a whole lot of groups that have engineered these dams, and RCS has done the engineering for a lot of dams that qualify here. Have you already contacted the various state and federal agencies that do this to get their inventory on the, I mean, was that part of what you did last time, or is that part of your intention this time?
Chair Ferrioli, Mentally Representative Cruz, as part of the task force, we have several federal agencies sitting there, as you know. We have not formally requested data on this from all the agencies. I assume we do that very quickly as soon as we move ahead on this bill. In the NRCS process, they're a very district and regional oriented situation. They don't serve on the task force. It's my sense that next biennium, particularly as part of the inventory, that we'll work more closely with them.
Yeah, follow up, Mr. Chair. I guess I would suggest that because they do have a fairly large inventory there, and my guess is that if you got all of the lists from all of the agencies that are involved in this sort of activity, the universe of dams still to be discovered would be considerably smaller.
Further questions? Thank you. I'm going to call Jennifer Robinson, Todd Heirigan, and Richard Kochesan. Robinson.
Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jennifer Robinson, Special Assistant to the Director, Division of State Lands. The division was unable to attend the previous hearing on House Bill 2102, but I submitted Director Clary's written testimony for your bill files. The division supports the goals of the Fish Passage Task Force, and we would like to see it be allowed to continue until they have finished their agenda. So we urge your favorable consideration of House Bill 2102 and the Dash 1 Amendment. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, does that include the new language of changing or to and?
Chair Ferrioli, Representative Messerly, I don't know the difference. I'm not that much of an expert. I spent my time on the Hydroelectric Reauthorization Task Force, so I know about the larger one.
Mr. Kochesan.
Thank you, Chair Ferrioli. Richard Kochesan, Water for Life. Section 5, as previously discussed on line 9, the clarification there really is a matter of consistency with provisions dealing with dam safety. That has been discussed literally for the last 4 years or two sessions, and for purposes of consistency, we would suggest that we delete the other or on line 9 and insert and I think that would perhaps eliminate some questions down the road.
Mr. Heatherton? Nothing to add. Questions for the panel?
I guess Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that it is that big a deal. Isn't this language the way it is, the way the feds read it now?
Co-Chair, Representative Cruz, in terms of federal interpretation, I could not address that, but in terms of state interpretation with respect to dam safety, the question has arisen in the past in terms of an impoundment of 9.2 acre feet or with a structure of 10 feet in height, as opposed to dealing with, quote, I guess, what would be described as a large facility, meeting both those standards, impoundment of 10 feet in height or more, with a capacity of 9.2 acre feet. So in, I think a general description or a general idea has been based that the facility or the structure would need to meet both standards. And that's why we were suggesting you would insert and literally you could have perhaps a 2.5 foot impoundment that holds 15 acre feet of water. That's, I don't think, the issue that we're trying to get at.
Okay, I guess, Mr. Chair, my concern there is just that dam, then you could have a 10-foot high dam that held 9 acre feet. It would need to be engineered. I mean, it would meet the standards for engineering purposes, but wouldn't meet the standards for this. And I guess that is a concern. It's nothing I feel like falling on the sword over, but just, I guess, trying to get some consistency across the spectrum here.
And that's co-chairs and representatives, and that's what we're saying in terms of dam safety requirements today. For purposes of consistency, meeting this with existing provisions, you would insert an and, so a facility needed to meet both requirements.
President, please, my sense of this is that the information is what's needed to a threshold so we can get a snapshot of how big the problem is. And I think the issue of and or really is immaterial. The question is if we have the and, we're consistent with existing language. But in any case, we need an inventory of the facilities that would be affected. And having that information, I think, would offer the opportunity to drive the issue to a different level if the next legislative session comes back with recommendations and they're requested for additional information, they'll have that opportunity. Then, in any case, this gets us into the interim of the project that gets the information we need. Any questions for the panel? Let me just summarize, and then we'll go to work session on this. This is an amendment that has been arrived at through the operations of a working group. The agencies have all testified in favor. The water resources groups have testified in favor. With the change, a one-word change that we can effect with a conceptual amendment. The one-word change occurs on page 3 on line 9, and it changes the word or to the word and. I'll go into a work session on the House Bill 2102 and entertain a motion on conceptual change from or to and. Before I go to work session, is there any other person here present that wishes to give testimony on House Bill 2102? Seeing none, we're in work session, and the chair will entertain a conceptual amendment on page 3, line 9, to change the word or to and.
Mr. Chair, so moved.
We have a motion for a conceptual amendment. As stated, are there any objections? Questions? Representative Keene.
There is more than one or. Word or in on line 9. I think you just want one of those.
It's the second or, I believe. Thank you very much, Representative King, for the clarification. Does the panel, does the committee understand the second or is the or referred to in the conceptual amendment? Seeing no objections, we have a conceptual amendment. The chair will entertain a motion for the dash 1 amendment for H. Bill 2102.
Mr. Chair. I move the dash 1 amendment for House Bill 2102 as conceptually amended.
Is there any objections to the dash 1? Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to move House Bill 2102 to Ways and Means, but we'll move it as amended with a due pass recommendation, and that it would be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for additional consideration.
The chair, so moved.
We have a motion on the floor. The committee staff will call the roll.
President Jensen, aye. President King,
aye.
President
Free, aye.
President
Leonard,
aye.
President
Morgan,
aye.
President Starr,
aye.
President Hughes.
Aye. 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 Motion passes, and will be moved to the full Ways and Means for subsequent consideration. That concludes our meeting today. Steve, let the record show that Senator Tarno is reduced, excused because of illness.